The reason I put a quote up there to begin with is partly to give you something to look at when you sit, settle down and have a look. But I love this last sentence here, because it's a kind of call for arms about the opportunities, but also the challenges that we have ahead of us. And BSF, as we just said, is an absolutely massive, massive opportunity. Really, really exciting, huge challenge. But with it, of course, there are responsibilities to make sure we're making the most of this huge investment. So what I'm going to be talking about today are some of the key questions that we've been asking around this and how we can make the most of BSF as a tool for changing learning and education in the UK. So I've got this publication which has just come out called What If? And this is a lot of the questions I'm going to be asking and talking about today are in this publication. So if you'd like to come and have a look at a copy of this, then we've got them on our stand, which is J6. I've got a few with me. Another publication as well called Towards New Learning Networks, which again is looking at new ways of organising learning. So if you'd like to come and get hold of one of these, then give me a shout afterwards. But what I'm going to hope to do is ask some of these questions and then look at how Future Hub are beginning to at least try and answer them, if not find really good solutions. And the first one is the big question. Just what if things could be really, really different? So not just how can we improve what we're doing already. Sorry, my alarm's going off telling me I'm probably going to do a presentation. Fantastic. So not just how can we improve things and make things better. What if we could almost start from scratch? What if we really do things differently and start from now? How could things look? How would we do things differently? And just as a backdrop to that, we know there are lots and lots of barriers to change. There are lots of things that stop us just starting from scratch. There are lots of things that are going to stop us just moving gradually as well as moving in large ways, moving radically in motion. On the side of there, the first order barriers are the things that are more simple to change, more simple to get over. And that includes the built environment, actually. Of course, it's very, very important we ask good questions about the built environment. But they're very, very, far easier, perhaps, than some of these issues and problems on the other side, which is about conceptual change and people's understanding of the roles of education. So first order barriers are still absolutely vital we address them, but it must be done in tandem with the second order barriers. So this is where conversations need to take place, where big questions need to be asked. So things like, what do curriculums look like in the future? What is assessment? How do we celebrate learning in the future? But it also ties in with what teachers see their roles within schools, how learners see their roles within schools, what the places schools are within communities, etc. So we have that in the back of the mind, that we have lots of barriers to get over and all resistances perhaps that we need to challenge. But the things that need to be addressed through conversation. And one of them is this one that's called persistence of belief. And it's building from what we know, what we expect schools to be because of our experience as pupils and as teachers. So how can we make those bigger movements with that persistence of belief underlying? So for today and for the rest of this presentation, I would like you to try and unlearn schools. Now, unlearning is a really nice way of thinking about it. It's kind of opposite of what we generally do in schools. We always talk about moving towards expertise, getting better at things, but this is actually moving away from something you already know. So for now, it's thinking, if we can move away from what we know about schools, where would we really want to go towards? So there's some really big questions at the bottom. So what's the vision of a school? If we don't think about the 9 to 3:30 thing, don't think about necessarily the ages or the place, what do we want to do in terms of creating new learning spaces? Where would we go? What new visions can we develop? So I've got a list of questions, and there are more. There are more in this publication. There are more that have to be asked, of course. But I've got a list of questions. I know there's lots of text on the slide, so it's just look at the first question. That's the one we're looking at. And there are other questions underneath which just kind of reinforce or change the angle in which you approach answering it. But the first one has to be, what sort of education do you want in the future? That has to be one of the biggest questions we need to ask before we even think about timetabling and building and all that kind of stuff. What's the big vision? So, for example, and this is kind of the format for the rest of the presentation, is a big question and one way in which we're looking at it. But I could cite hundreds of examples of other things people are doing. So one of the first things perhaps that we all need to look is look where else people are trying to answer these questions. But the Inquiring Minds project is about what happens when personalisation really does take place, when it's really put into school context. And this is a 3-year-long project that we're running. It's funded by Microsoft. And it's taking personalisation in terms of building a curriculum around learners' needs. So what happens if teachers and learners sit down together and they develop what they're going to do for a term, for a year together, starting from what the learners are interested in, what the learners need to do. And then you have the teacher's expertise helping and guiding them all the way through. It's a really, really tricky, really, really difficult project. And the first half of the year was absolute murder. It was really difficult because not only were the teachers not sure about their new role in a truly personalised learning environment, but the students weren't sure of their role either. They were used to knowing what schools are about, going in and sitting down, being told things. And even in active sessions, that's the kind of format they were used to. So the big step change in thinking about what inquiry really looks like, what students really look like, where they're the researchers, where they're leading learning, with support from teachers and other peers. So there's a project there, and there's a website, inquiringminds.org.uk, which has all sorts of literature, all sorts of examples of practices that teachers are developing with these learners, all sorts of tools that are being used as well. And there's also a discussion board for other people who are asking these sorts of questions. So please do go and have a look, join in, and see if you can contribute and learn from others as well. So we've got that kind of that big vision of what we want education to be. We're not quite sure what it's going to look like. But one of those key elements within that is the sorts of relationships we want to foster. So that's, what's the relationship between the teacher and the learner? Is it the same one we have now? Does it change completely? Does it vary throughout the day? What's the relationship between schools and communities, between learners and learners, etc.? Now, one way we're looking at this is a project called La Piazza, which is a European-based project, and it's looking at use of public spaces. So not schools, not museums, just public spaces. How can we foster intergenerational learning? And the way we're using it at the moment is we're looking at using mobile technology because it's in the public space and it's a transient space, and people can use the technology they bring with them. But how can we develop relationships between grandparents and children and teachers and community members? How can we get those relationships as the core learning relationships in a particular activity? So La Piazza has been going on again for about a year or so, and there's videos and there's examples of this on our website if you want to check it out. But if we look at that way, if we look at the big relationships we want to foster community relationships, relationships between older generations and younger generations. How would a school then be designed to foster that rather than the traditional peer-based relationships? Okay. Another one then, looking at the preferred ways of working. Comes back to maybe collaboration at one time. I quite like independent study. I quite like sitting on my sofa and reading. I also like going to lectures and being told stuff by really expert people. But it's the whole range that I like. So how can we design schools and spaces that afford those, that allow those sorts of possibilities? And of course, I think pretty much every single standard I've seen has either had the word innovation or personalisation on it. It might be useful if everyone defined what they meant by personalisation, because I think there are lots and lots of different interpretations of it. But one way we did this, we worked with Demos and Toshiba to develop a personalisation charter. And that was saying, what should learners be able to expect, demand perhaps, in a personalised learning environment? And this was very much done by researchers and academics and experts in a room. It wasn't done by learners. But maybe the next stage is, what happens if you take a charter like that as a framework and develop a learner charter with learners? The presentation before me today was all about student voice. How can we develop what students should expect in a personalised learning environment? And then build from there. If that's the vision, what then? How then do you encompass that in terms of building, in terms of the spaces you're going to create? Both those, again, are available on the web. And I think we have some of those charters on our stand, if you'd like to come and have a look. So we've got the sort of the relationships we're looking at between peers, the relationships between generations, etc. We're looking at personalisation. All these different issues are coming together. But one of the others, of course, is about learner voice and learner choice. Again, many, many questions, many different ways you can approach it, but it's an absolute vital one we look at. Not just in terms of how are we going to change the way the school day is run about learner voice, but how do we build from learner voice in terms of creating new schools and new learning environments? And we've got a couple of projects here that are quite interesting. The CreateScape project, that's going to start there. The CreateScape project is a free tool available online. You download and you can make your own mediascapes. So a mediascape is where you have a real place, a map, and you can put virtual digital sounds or pictures on that map. And as you walk around the real space, on a PDA, you can hear the sounds, you can see the images, and whatever, and it changes the way in which you can think about space. But it also means you can begin to create yourself new ways of thinking about what's around you. So we have on the right there a video of Savannah, which is a project we ran a few years ago, using this pretty much the same technology, where students run around pretending to be lions. That was the story. They had to be lions. They had to go out and hunt and gather and look after their young, and they would go out and play the game in this on a normal school playing field, and they would fail absolutely dismally. They wouldn't get it at all, and they'd have to go back into the classroom and they'd get DVDs and books and all sorts to work out how lions live, and they'd generate their understanding better through discussion and through research. And then they'd go back out into this game space, and they'd be lions again, and they'd be more successful, and they would develop their practice that way. And that was for the learners who like to run around, likely more kinesthetic in their learning. Now, Creative Game Set is a free tool, which means you can do that, or you can create a history tool, or even better, the students can begin to create tools of their school, different ways of interacting with. A primary school, for example, used a picture of a human body, and the children ran around the human body pretending to be blood cells running from the heart to the arms, and investigating how your body works in a very, very different way. So other ways we can use new spaces and augment them, so change them virtually rather and digitally rather than physically. Okay. And I think this is one of the most important, for me personally, one of the most important questions we need to be asking at the moment. It's about the relationship between the schools that we're building and the local communities, and where that expertise is and where we're going to look at it. So we have knowledge and skills within schools, within communities, and beyond, within industry. What's the relationship with industry coming into the schools? Parents, grandparents, etc. Especially if we're going to start thinking about what the changing dynamic is within practice, we need to start thinking about what the new roles are in terms of teaching, in terms of learning. And some projects we're doing there, two very simple ones. One is thinking about how can we get authentic expertise into a Spanish learning classroom for primary school. Well, we've created a very simple piece of software that allows a video link between a school in Spain and a school in England. They're both doing the same quiz that they do for this fashion, web application. But the answers to the Spanish school's questions are all in the English classroom and vice versa. So the children have to begin to start talking in Spanish very, very simply. And it's quite an interesting twist to that project. The idea is that as you develop through the programme, that becomes less and less important. And what you're left with is two classes of children video conferencing in a different language. So language learning. Or think about expertise in the community. And this is, I think it's on a stand just around the corner. Tim Boundary, being an expert in space and science teaching, working virtually through video link again with a classroom. So he's an expert, an incredible expert, 100 miles away, and yet he can be a part of that classroom and part of that experience. So what's the ways in which we can create those new links between the community and what's going on inside the classroom? And I think the last one, so we can have a bit of time for chat, is about the resources and when and where we're going to access them. Now, there must be 30, 40, 50 different VLE solutions, MLE solutions, and all those sorts of things. But again, if you're thinking from a user, well, a usability point of view, a user's point of view, when do they want to be able to create, collect, use resources? When do they want to be able to share them? What's the relationship, again, between the school and the community? We hold a number of workshops each year, innovations workshops, really, and one was looking at mobile learners. And this is such an important description of a learner that it's really only been really understood and investigated now. The learners, the mobile person, they don't just learn in the classroom, we know that they learn at home, they learn in between. So how can we support learners to learn incidentally when they're waiting at the bus stop for 5 minutes? How can they capture things they learn accidentally? How can they learn at home on the bus in the classroom? And in mobile learning, talk about context crossing. So how can you take one activity, maybe an authentic part of the community, and develop it further in the classroom, part of one community? And maybe there's a way that new technology can help us create those new links. But again, all these questions. So what's most appropriate to the individual learners? I think, again, the publication here has got even more questions that we can begin to ask, and things need to be asked. But at the end of it, it comes down to this one. How can we embed all those answers into what we're actually going to design and use in the future? And it's a really, really tricky one. Not only is it about how we communicate the vision to people who are building and the partners we're working with, it's not only about how we're going to choose and develop the visions that may all be different between all of us here, let alone within the school and the community, but it's how we can move on from them. One project we have at the moment that relates to that is called Teachers as Innovators. It's saying there are lots and lots of visions within a community. There are lots of practices around here. You can see how varied innovation is and digital technologies are. But if teachers are the ones who are going to be driving educational change, what is it that's going to support them to do that? And we're talking about the word capacity of teachers to drive educational change. And it seems like, well, is there something on a personal level? Is there something that needs to happen at CPD and professional development and initial teacher training levels? Is there something that needs to happen on the institutional level, the national level, local level, etc.? To provide those things in the middle about the opportunities, the motivations and the encouragements for teachers to be the ones who are developing new practices, radical new practices, really pushing boundaries, rather than having to react to ones that are sent down from DFES or whoever else. So how can we enable and encourage teachers to innovate? And teachers do innovate already, we know that. They're absolutely fantastic at taking a resource and making it appropriate, very creative with those resources, making them appropriate for their classrooms? But how can we enable teachers to be the ones that decide what the next practice is going to be? And that's what this project's all about. So that we have lots of time for discussion and questions, I'd like to end with an invitation, particularly about that project, the Teachers as Innovators project, but also about the other things. So if you would like to get involved in any of those, then that's an email. I've actually got my own email address with me as well, if you want it. Please do get in contact. Come and talk to us now and see how you can help us and we can help you. The Teachers as Innovators project is trying to find the way to support teachers to develop new practices. If you can begin from that kind of groundswell of teachers being the ones that are determining what's going to happen in classrooms and in learning scenarios, then hopefully we can get something that everyone can share and understand. Okay, I'm going to stop there if that's okay.